Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Today, we're talking about the issue of soft power and how countries engage with influencers, both in the media as well as in politics, to develop relationships between countries. Now, coming on the show tonight, I have Melissa Idris from BFM 89.9. A radio station that I used to work for, an old colleague of mine. She, of course, is the anchor for the morning show. I also have Rahman Hussain, who is a member of UMNO Youth, and in his capacity as member of the youth movement of the once dominant UMNO. He was invited on this program. They're both very jet lagged. They both returned from the United States on different programs. Melissa, you've come back from an international reporting tour covering the US midterms. Tell us about that.
That's right. So the US, so I got back on Saturday, so about a week ago, and the US midterms on the 6th of November, so our Deepavali. It was a 10-day program, brought together 24 journalists from 24 different countries. I was lucky enough to be chosen here in Malaysia. I was the only Malaysian journalist to go. And, you know, I mean, within this region, it was really interesting because they brought journalists from every part of the world. I mean, you had, yeah, from Asia, Malaysia, but also Philippines and Vietnam. But then you had countries like Rwanda and Sierra Leone and Brazil, which was really quite interesting because you brought together all these journalists, put them on a bus, take them around the US to cover US politics. So it was quite an experience.
Right, so the world came with you to experience the US. Rahman, you were on a different program, something that Melissa had been on previously, which is the International Visiting Leaders Program. Tell us about that.
So basically, it's a long-standing program, which is about 60 years now. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the 8 guys from the Asia-Pacific region, which also includes a local Samoan city council from New Zealand. Now, we were taken on a 22 days tour of about 5 states in America, not just to see the American culture, but also to understand the democracy part of it, and of course, how federalism works.
Right, so there was a theme to
it. There was a theme to it. So we were from the bluest state, which is in D.C., New York, and all the way to Nebraska, which is the heartland of...
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, it is the heartland of America.
Right, okay. Okay, so this is interesting because many of us have perhaps a relationship to the U.S. Mm. It's a superpower. Mm. It's also, you know, the purveyor of much of the popular culture that we, especially Anglophone Malaysians, consume. So, you know, there is stuff that, and it's true,
it's
right?
True, it's
I grew up in Sesame Street.
It's true, right?
Okay, so.
Sesame Street is not the beacon of popular culture of the U.S.
The question I would ask you, though, it is. Well, that's another show. Why did you want to go on the tour, Melissa?
Well, for one thing, we talk a lot about US politics, but my only exposure to US politics has always been either BBC, CNN, the New York Times, Washington Post, or the Wall Street Journal, right? It's always been through someone else's lens. So this was an opportunity. The State Department got in touch with me, the US Embassy here got in touch with me and said, look, we want to take you to the US so that you can see what is happening on the ground. You can digest that, and then you can report it from your perspective. And also, you can bring it to a Malaysian perspective and see what the relevance is to a Malaysian audience, which I think is often, you know, it's missed out. So a Malaysian reading, you know, a New York Times article, yeah, you get it, but you get it through an American perspective, right? What is the relevance to a Malaysian audience? And they said, well, you take it to the Malaysian audience.
Right, okay, so we'll come to that and what you learned from it. But Rahman, what about you? I mean, what excited you about the possibilities of going on this tour? You're taking time off from your job, and you have a real job. Yeah. I don't mean in party politics, but like a real job.
Of course. I think, see, my interest in US politics began when I started reading the memoirs of Lyndon B. Johnson. And I came from Negeri Sembilan, where there was this estate called Felda LBJ, which was named after Lyndon B. Johnson, the first sitting American president who came to Malaysia in the 1970s. So that was my first foray into politics. And I'd like to take a cue from Melissa's answer. That opened up my eyes. But then again, I realized from then on, everything I've read is all about from everyone else's lens. Right. It's all about, okay, this is what I read. It's not what I've experienced. So when the State Department, the US Embassy here, called me and said, you know what, we want to, you've been very vocal, you've been part of the political system, we want to take you to America and just see for yourself and see how can both I mean, what are the differences, or what are the similarities, more importantly, between the two systems, and how you can take back and how you can expand on this idea back home?
Right. You know, one of the things, though, I must say, from my own experience on a reporting tour, is how wonderfully organized it was, and how beautifully curated the entire program was. So give us a sense, Melissa, of the shape of that program that you were on.
Okay, it was intense. So when I got the itinerary, I thought, wow, that's a really tight schedule. I mean, the days began at 7 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock, you know, the first briefing or so. And then it went on. And because it was essentially elections programming, right? You were on an election schedule. It would have to be kind of free, it would have to be fluid. So depending on when the Democratic candidate would turn up at the headquarters, depending on when the concession speeches would be made for the Republicans. You're absolutely right. The Foreign Press Center, which organized this tour for us, did such a great job with the logistics. And I was in California, LA, with LA traffic, but they curated it, you're absolutely right, and made sure that we had access to different stakeholders, that we spoke to both Republicans and Democrats, spoke to the media, I got to have a session with essentially the elections commissioner of the LA, of Los Angeles. And that was an amazing opportunity to learn about the electoral system in the US and how they count votes. I mean, coming off May 9th, that was such a great opportunity to see how democracy is in action in the US.
Right, so you have an opportunity to meet with the stakeholders. Mm. I think that's one of the best things that I experienced when I was on the tour myself. Mm. Rahman, how did it work for you? Much smaller group, much more intimate. Yeah. What did they present to you? Who did you go to meet?
So, again, I will agree with Melissa. I will agree with you. It was such a fantastically curated program. My day starts at 8:30, probably an hour later, and usually ends about 6, a bit more sleep, and we always end about 6 p.m. But the thing is, the people I've met are from different various backgrounds. I met with the mayor of Boston, who is championing youth city council, and allow for youth to actually vote for their own youth city council members. Mm. And we also went to Plymouth, which is the first American town, and spoke to the League of Women Voters.
First American town for European Americans. Not Native Americans, but okay.
Yeah, of course. And then we met with the Secretary of State of Nebraska, Secretary of State of California, and then we met with election commissions as well. And this is where I realized that this is a program that not only allows you to just see, but also we took part in some of the campaignings. We met with Democratic National Chair members, Republican National Chair members, and we got to really dissect and really watch them just have a go at one another.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, and we're going to come back with more. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. I have with me Melissa Idris from BFM 89.9 and Rahman Hussain from UMNO Youth. Both of them have been recipients of an outreach program coming from the United States government to media professionals as well as people in politics, trying to get them to understand what America is and how it works. But they also want something from you, don't they, Melissa? What is it that they wanted from you? What was the deal? Oh, it just a leisurely junket?
There is no such thing as a free lunch, right? So I was very aware that they paid for my travel, for my accommodation, my transportation. But I told them up front, like, look, I'm going to treat this as any other reporting tour. This is a work event. And I said, you know, I'm going to be completely honest with what I see in my reporting. And they said, great. So I have to give credit to the U.S. State Department, to the U.S. Embassy here. They said, all we want is that you get to go, you have access to I guess, U.S. policy, U.S. society. The things that you talk about, you get an unfiltered view of that. And I think that was really all that they wanted.
Were the output issues?
Yes, so they did say the deliverables were essentially for a 10-day reporting tour, make sure you at least have a minimum of 6 stories. So, you know, they gave you time to file the stories. Even though it was a really packed schedule, they'll give you an hour or so, okay, now you go and file your stories, cut up your video, your audio, whatever it is, And being radio, it was really easy for me to just pick up the phone and do a live crossover, a report, a standing report from wherever I was. Just given the time difference was a bit of a problem, though.
Right. Okay. And Raman, what about you? I mean, slightly different program, not with journalists. Mm. So what was the, what are the deliverables for you?
The deliverables for us was an honest feedback. So every time we finish a state, so let's say, for example, I was in DC for about a week. Also on Friday, we have a debriefing whereby we were expected to just say it as it is. What was good? What was bad? What did you see? And this also includes the interactions in the evening. Now, the thing is, a lot of people will understand that, okay, it was only limited to the working hours. But no, our programs also include the fact that whoever you meet on the street, what do you get a sense of it? Do people target you for being different? Do people bring up issues? Like, one of the highlight, or to a certain extent an interesting moment, was we had a local hospitality whereby a local family would just host us for dinner, like three of us or two of us for like 2 hours long dinner.
So you get a home cooked meal.
I did, which was very good.
With just six of you, or was it eight of you?
Eight.
So, was possible, right?
So we had like three, four different houses or different families hosting different smaller groups. So we had a couple of interesting guys in, and I had the best Atlantic salmon I've ever had in my life. However, during one of those interactions, one of them came up to me and said, because the one who went on the dinner was a Malaysian, a Vietnam, and a Myanmar, someone from Myanmar. And she said to me, I didn't know you guys could speak English this well,
yeah,
which to me was, what?
I got that a lot.
Okay.
Your English is so good.
Yeah,
and I'm like, well, that we learned it in school.
Okay. So, okay, one of the things that's said about America is, one, it is a continent. It's very huge, and many Americans don't travel. I mean, there's segment of Americans who do travel. Many Americans don't travel. They don't know very much about the world, or they get the world through the media. Mm. Now, and we've gotten America through the media. What is it that you think you've learned in the two tours that you've done, Melissa, that you didn't actually know beforehand? I mean, what is it that surprised you because of this face-to-face interaction?
So I had a few things that were either, I guess, proven or justified in my head. In a sense, I saw some evidence to that to confirm what I already believed. But on the other hand, I had some things, I relearned some things. But I just want to pick up what Raman just said just now about, I was very worried that on such a tight schedule that all I would meet were the people that the State Department wanted me to meet. But what was wonderful was that because there were pockets of time, and because, you know, you're a reporter in a foreign country, you go out and talk to people, that interaction, I thought, fed a lot more of my worldview of how I saw the US. Mm. And what I learned essentially was, what was confirmed was that the US society really is hyper-partisan. It's very divided. And that was...
Is it political?
Political. Politically divided. And that was, I think, a little unnerving to witness. The second thing that I learned, which was, I guess, had to be debunked in my head, was actually not all Republicans are typecast the way we read them in the media. Not all Democrats are the way we see them on TV. It's a spectrum, right?
Yeah, so they're both big tent parties.
Yeah,
isn't that
so
the expression
I met
they use?
So many different types of Republicans, so many different types of Democrats, and I think I had to relearn what I thought a Republican was, what I thought a Democrat was.
Raman, for you, what were the lessons that you, things that surprised you?
I think the thing that really surprises me is how the states are very powerful, and how civil society works in the larger context. And we met with two very interesting civil society. One is the National County Association. You have about 3,000 counties in America. And then we met with the National Governors Association, both of which serves as a bridge between the federal government and the state. And one of the things, when we met with the state secretary of Nebraska, we realized that there is so much power vested in the states, and this is how American federalism works. So the famous saying there, which I've never heard before, is the state makes the country. I mean, I've always thought, because of how
United
we were...
United States of America.
Exactly. I mean, in a sense that, because we've been exposed to this constitutional monarchy and how the British sees the world, it's always been federal, and then you go to the states. And when I went there and I realized that the states goes as far as, well, I decide who can vote and not vote, and then I realized, oh, wow, this is a whole different way of doing things.
Right. So we have, in fact, in the little time, the issue of voter suppression, that must have been quite a shocker for somebody thinking of America as an advanced democracy, that it should actually try to stop its citizens from voting.
And I think that that's very location specific. Georgia, I think you're referring to that case. Where I was, essentially in LA County, which is one of the biggest counties in LA, it's fascinating because they make it so easy for you to vote. They make it so easy. It's just whether you want to or not.
Could you have voted if you wanted to?
Unfortunately, no. But the idea is they make it so easy for you. And that's why voter turnout is always really important, to see how much people want to come out and vote. Because essentially, it's really quite easy.
Okay, in the minute that we have left, Rama, you were there for the midterms as well.
Yes.
Was the backdrop, was everybody talking about it? And the results, did they surprise the people around you?
Well, some of it. I'm very surprised with Nebraska, because Nebraska has always been a red state.
That's
however,
right.
Which is a Republican state.
Republican state, right? However, Nebraska passed Medicaid expansion. So to a certain extent, you see a different worldview. I mean, you would expect a Republican party to just toe the party line and say, look,
they pass an Obama policy, right?
Yeah. But then again, the state actually passed an Obama legacy, which to me just opens up a whole different spectrum. I'm like, oh, wow, you can actually do this.
There were some surprises, for sure.
Okay, and we'll be back with some of those surprises later on. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm talking with Melissa Idris from BFM 89.9 and Rahman Hussein from UMNO Youth, both of them recipients of American government programs to bring foreigners to their country to help them understand how America works. And because both of you, I know you're jet lagged, but you're looking extremely fresh for people who are jet lagged. Okay, so this is the era of Trump, and the midterms represent also a kind of barometer where America is going. Mm. Having elected Trump some 2 years ago, the backdrop, of course, was the migrant caravan coming from Central America. Also, many other ongoing themes in American society, including the question of Islamophobia, some policies of the Trump administration targeting Muslims in particular. Melissa, when you look back at this last 10 days that you spent in the U.S. and also the results of the midterms, what struck you the most?
Well, Donald Trump was the elephant in the room, or as they said, the elephant in the polling booth. I really think that...
Is that the mascot for the Democratic Party, the elephant?
No, which one? It was a donkey.
The donkey, for the Republicans, and an elephant for the Democrats.
So no pun intended. Okay. But really... It was essentially a referendum on Trump's past 2 years, right? But it was also a referendum on this national, this brand of populist politics that he brings to the table.
And therefore, it's a story for the rest of the world as well,
exactly.
In the way that the Italian elections were, the French elections
Europe
were.
Europe is moving very, very far right.
Brazil, you know, that's another example.
Yeah.
But I guess essentially what I learned about Trump was particularly interesting was that in the last few days before the elections, I mean, he's not on the ticket, right? His name was not on the ballot, but it became a referendum about him. And he had managed to become a very central part of the campaign because he had really come front and center with all the rhetoric about immigration, about that caravan, so much so that I think he did a little bit of damage towards the end. And perhaps, you know, one of the things that we were talking about earlier about, you know, me learning about the different shades of Republicans, there were, I'm sure, many Republicans that felt uncomfortable with that kind of rhetoric, with that kind of positioning, and may have voted against the Republican Party in these midterm elections, which is why we saw the Democratic Party win the House of Representatives.
Right, so we had a flip there, but the Senate remained with the Republicans. Rahman, you know, many people, and especially I think in Malaysia, look askance at Donald Trump. There's a general negativity about the U.S. presidency at this point in time. Did you have any apprehensions about going to a country led by a man who was so vociferously anti-Muslim, so vociferously against the marginal communities, a man who's kind of like generating hate at every turn?
I think I had my reservations, but not because of the Islamophobia that he is. Mm-hmm. But my reservation was, will I get to see the real America? Will I get to experience how divided they are, if they are? And of which we've proven that some of them are, depending on where you are. But to a certain extent, I really want to see how does the check and balances work in America, and which I think this is a central part of any democracy, and how the civil society plays in all that. And I will just take a bit of Melissa's point about how some Republicans are actually against Donald Trump in a sense, but really didn't want to.
I learned a new term, RINO, Republican in name only.
Yes.
R-I-N-O.
Yes.
No, RINO. Yes.
So in one of the stops, like I said earlier, I met with the Republican National Committee Chair and of course the DNC National Committee Chairs, and they spoke to me about the political strategy of Trump and the political strategy of the Democrats and Republican. And they use this very phrase that I think applies everywhere. See, the Republicans don't need a candidate that they love. They just need a candidate that can carry them. The Democrats, the reason why they're finding it difficult at this point in time, even to find, even Beto O'Rourke, which is a superstar in terms of Democrat, couldn't carry Texas against Ted Cruz, because the Democrats, to a certain extent, want a candidate they all can fall in love with. That represents.
So this is a party dynamics.
This is the party dynamics. And that made me realize, oh, wow, this is how the party frames who gets to be a candidate.
But did you manage to get one of those Make America Great Again hats?
I really wanted one of those MAGA hats.
Okay, the paraphernalia aside, some of the results were quite stunning. You said we already the House of Representatives moved from Republican control to Democrat control. Mm. But then we also had the rise of women winning an extraordinary story. Did you report on that?
I did, yeah, and I thought it was a massive win for women in general in the US. But it was a win because the Democrats had made a big bet on women, right, for fielding so many women candidates. And that bet paid off. So we had the first two women, Muslim women in Congress, so a lot of firsts. The first two Muslim women, I think the first Somali-American woman as well. She had a great victory speech. She began the speech with Assalamualaikum, Alhamdulillah, and it became this wonderful meme that just went around social media. There was also, I believe, the first Native American woman as well.
So who was also an openly lesbian.
Correct, yeah. So, I mean, a lot of firsts for women in the US. And I think the most women that they've ever had, I think,
114.
Yeah.
114. Okay, but still less than a quarter of the House. But never mind.
Baby steps.
For a democracy that's over 200 years old. Okay, but, these are the paradoxes of America, right? Mm-hmm. On one hand, you have this atmosphere of Islamophobia, mm-hmm. fear of foreigners, mm-hmm. the xenophobia, whatever it is you might call it. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Americans are voting for precisely those groups. How do you account for it? Did you ever ask people around you?
When I was in the Midwest, we call it the Midwest. When I was in the Midwest, I asked one of the state senate from the Republican Party, and I said, look, let's be honest. The trade war is costing your voters, right? How are they reacting? And to my surprise, some of them says, it's okay. They believe that the Republican and the current president will fix this. And I'm like, I'm baffled. How can you do this? But at the same time, these are the same people who will vote and who voted for Medicaid expansion. Now, this spectrum of how people vote actually opens your eyes, and then realize that, especially post May 9th, then you realize voters don't necessarily vote. You can't archetype voters.
Yeah.
And there's no, because this guy is such and such.
It's very issue driven
It's very issue driven.
That was something I learned too.
And the thing is, one thing I've learned is the Democrats who won today during the midterm actually didn't engage Trump. I think this is one of the things that because some candidates actually bothered to engage Trump, and then the conversation became all about Trump instead of all about the voters.
If I could just add on to that, really the kind of Islamophobia sentiment that you're hearing, that's a small base. That's the hardcore base of, say, Donald Trump or the very conservative the very conservative side of the Republican Party. There's a silent majority, much like in Malaysia. Yep. There is a silent majority in the US that want to vote for someone who looks like them, who speaks about their issues. So I guess that's why.
This is a great segue for our next section. We're going to talk about how America could be a mirror for us, right? So stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Melissa Idris from BFM, Rahman Hussein from UMNO Youth. We're talking about the United States of America. They've both been on programs sponsored by the United States government to help them understand how America works. Question is, has it helped them understand how Malaysia ticks as well? So this is, Rahman, I'm going to start with you.
But of course.
You've come from a party that had dominated Malaysian politics for 6 decades. Mm. It's now lost power. Mm. Very interesting time for you to go there. Yeah. Was there something about American politics, the lay of the land, and American people that helped you understand something about where you were coming from, Malaysia?
I think to a certain extent, going through from a blue state to a red state made me realize that, look, voters, you can't archetype voters. You can't just put them in a box and say, these voters will vote that way forever, right? I've met hardcore Republicans who suddenly say, you know what, I think my insurance is going to kill me. I'm going to vote for progressive candidate. And I've met Democrats who, you know what, I think my Democrats candidate or leaders have failed me in terms of policies. Now I'm just going to go around and shift. Mm-hmm. Now, this shifting between has a lot to do with values. I think this is something UMNO has to remember and UMNO has to learn, that while people will vote because you speak or they share sentiment or they share values or race or creed, but issues will trump.
Okay, so this is because the expectation was that a party loyalty trumps everything, yes, right? And the rhetoric of being a co-ethnic or co-religionist will also do it. Yeah. But there are complexities in the American system that allow this kind of thing. That people, you have the vote for all levels of American society and governance. It's multi-level.
Yes.
And you can also vote on specific
issues,
right? There That's are right. plebiscites, so
like
I don't know what they call
it. Prop 8 or whatever, yeah.
Right, so I mean, that complexity, I mean, we don't have that in our electoral system.
Yes,
so
that's
true. So how do people end up having to decide, okay, on balance, which is more important, right?
Yes, so I think that's why the party machinery is very important. So, you know, the GOP machinery, the Democrat machinery, and people are engaged to learn, to teach, right? So there's, you know, those phone banking where you call and you, have you heard about this proposition? Mm. The voter education, voter awareness campaign or movement is very big because they feel like before you get to the polling booth, you should be informed. But I hear what you're saying. I mean, there's so much to learn before going to cast your ballot. Sometimes there's voter fatigue. When you were asking about the mirror between the US and Malaysia, I think that was one of the mirrors, that perhaps, you know, there's this fatigue with politics, there's this fatigue with knowing what the issues are, with, you know, you're tired of the bickering that's happening.
Right, okay, the thing, because we've known about the US for many years, is that there's low voter participation, right? Mm-hmm. So in any presidential election, you'd have less than 50% of the voters actually participating in it. This election was quite different, I think, in terms of voter participation, right?
So in terms of voter turnout, I think this is the highest ever since 1914. So we have 49.
The First World War?
Yes, 14, okay. We had a turnout of about 49%. Now, in 1914, it was 52%. Now, this has got to do a lot with federalism and how the country and the state is founded. In a sense that every state has different election laws. Now, one state says you have to bring an IC or a voter ID before you vote or before you can even register to vote. Some states like California says it's okay as long as your name is on the ballot.
So, motor voter registration, so it's on your ID.
It's on your ID, And to take a cue on Melissa, California is actually has the state prepares you like a 60-page voter education about what are the propositions, what are on the ballots, who are on the ballot, who's running for what, and so on and so forth.
Do you think, Rahman, that Malaysians would welcome more time demanded of them to participate, to have to think through issues, to vote on specific
issues? I don't know. Would you, Sharad, would you like?
Absolutely. I think now more than ever.
I think this will tie back to the urban-rural gap. The urbanites and the counties whereby there are a lot of more college-educated voters, they will want to take time.
You see,
but the rural one, they'd be like, okay, so it's the onus is upon the political machinery or the candidates to go around. And when I was in Nebraska, I met one of the state senator who championed this whole Medicaid expansion. And he says he has spent the last 2 years going door to door trying to educate people. in the whole of Nebraska.
Okay, you know, when you say Nebraska, I don't have a mental image. Oh. Wizard of Oz is the only thing, but I don't. That's not even Nebraska. Okay, what Nebraska?
That's true.
Is it wheatland? Is it rural? Is that what it is?
It's called the Great Plains of America, whereby they have more cows than people.
Bison. They used to have bison.
Okay, now I have a visual image. Okay. But to add on to that, I thought it was the youth participation this time around, and I think that's similar to also a mirror to Malaysia, right? The youth vote was the most invigorated vote. I spent time on the campus. University of Southern California, University of Nevada as well, UCLA as well. So it was really essentially, you can see it was the youth vote. They were energized. I think they didn't want to be left out. They wanted their voice to be heard this time around. And I'm pretty sure that a large part of that high turnout was really pushed up because of the youth.
Okay, so both of you, in turn, would you support lowering the voting age to 18?
Oh,
Rahman?
Yes.
Yes,
I would.
Yes.
But you know, it will transform our politics irrevocably,
because
dramatically.
Because one of the meetings I had in Harvard was about what happens if it's not enough just to educate voters. What if just raising awareness it's not working, right? Because people thought 18 is too young, they're probably not well developed, whatever, right? But to me, it's the responsibility of a political party and also civil society to go and educate.
Okay, so we talk a lot about civic empowerment in this country now, after May 9th. Any lessons from the American situation for civic education or civic engagement, civil society that important to American politics?
Well, yeah, so I think the ability to have those conversations, perhaps this is what we can learn. Now, based on what I saw, it seems like that ability to have those types of conversations about, you know, issues, about differences, it seems to be that space seems to be shrinking, getting smaller, but they're still having it, and they're having it much more than we are. And I think the only way to kind of build this kind of civic consciousness, civic mindedness, and the engagement is to allow for those conversations to happen. You know, yes, you can end up in a fighting and a shouting match, but you're actually talking about it. Yeah. You know, I've seen at a hotel buffet breakfast, you know, on the morning of elections, what appeared to be a hardcore Republican having a heated conversation with what appeared to be a moderate Democrat, but they were having it over breakfast, over coffee, and I thought that was really, really heartening to see. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll go from the American breakfast table to the Malaysian mama, kopitiam, for the next segment. I'm going to be talking about what all this means for Malaysia. Maybe Malaysia should do this outreach as well. We have something to tell the world. Stay tuned. Let's talk with me, Sharad Kutin. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. My guest, Melissa Idris from BFM 89.9, and Rahman Hussein from UMNO Youth. We've been talking about the American political system, their recent experience of it, and lessons that we in Malaysia can learn. I want to ask them now about whether we should have a similar program for those around the region, or perhaps further afield from the African continent, from Latin America, from the US. Should we bring Americans over to learn about us? Because clearly they need to know very little. I mean, it's just based on your experience, Rahman, about how they didn't know that we spoke English in this country, for instance.
Exactly.
So they don't know about our English colonial history, right? As they had as well. So do you think it'd be a great idea to...
I think it will. I completely agree with the idea. Now, when I was an exco member of UMNO Youth, what we did in 2014 was we did an exchange program where we invited people from the youth wing from the AK Party in Turkey. We brought them around and for about a week to experience how Malaysia is. They also observe one of our by-election in Teluk Intan.
This is the AK Party of Erdogan.
Erdogan Party.
Well, everybody is loved with the AK Party.
Of course,
so is UMNO Youth.
Of course.
Okay, what is that? So coming out of that, what did you learn about organizing something that sort?
The idea is to promote common elements. these common issues. I mean, we talk about democracy, and I think earlier before we talk about this rising tide of nationalism and populism. Now, by having this kind of engagement, by having people inside or you know, visiting us, then we got to build on that and then realize that, look, we don't have to be a singular nation. We have a lot of common issues around us. We don't have to hate one another. We don't have to allow for some nationalist rhetorics and to divide us between one nation to another.
You know what I was doing a bit of research about this. I don't know about other countries in the region, but Singapore, in fact, has a very similar program. Oh. I know some Malaysian journalists have been on it. It's the visiting journalist program that they have, and they've had it for many, many years. Right. Melissa, would you be in favor of it? And do you think, and this is a taxpayer issue, the taxpayers will be willing to pay for it? Because I know people who are very resentful say, oh, it's my taxpayer money that is going to fund all these foreigners coming to my country.
Yeah, and look, it's not going to be cheap, right? That someone has to foot the bill for sure. But I think there's value in having that kind of, you know, allowing for that kind of access. Because as what I've seen was, the kinds of questions that I got about Malaysia were very... were almost ignorant to the point where, oh, it's a Muslim country. Oh, you speak English. Oh, what?
You're mandated
you don't
to
live
vote.
In huts. I'm exaggerating, of course, but I do think there's value to be had there. But on the flip side, Sharad, I think that programs like that can only work if Malaysia is open enough to accept criticism from foreign press. So if you're going to invite foreign press to come in and report Malaysia as they see it, then you have to be able to take it as it is.
To add on, I think for this to be a successful program, we must be able to cater to different side of the country. We can't just choose to display.
It's not just KL. It has to be outside of KL.
You can't just choose to highlight the latte drinking guys in Bangsa.
The super liberals like myself.
You know, must go to the.
You have to take them around.
Yeah, you have to take them around
and expose them to the real.
Okay,
world.
Well, what about this, right? Do you trust government and you know, coming from a party that had government for so long, that they will also be unbiased, that they will allow for the people who come to meet everybody from all sides of the political divide, and actually several divides in this country? Do you think that this government, Melissa, would actually do that?
Well, look,
give time to UMNO, now that they're in the opposition.
No, to be completely honest with you, I think that there are good people in Wisma Putra who can and are open to that kind of exposure. But whether the higher powers that be, whether the Malaysian society, the mass Malaysians, are happy to read in a foreign news outlet the truth about the way the world sees Malaysia, I don't know whether we are ready. I mean, let's not talk about government. Okay. Civil society, are we ready?
Do you think we are? I mean, how much would it take for us to be able to take that criticism? Because we're very happy when we're flattered. We know we love to trumpet the successes, and then you know, then there's a lot of very angry breast beating when it comes to criticism.
This is something that I hope for. I mean, if we are going to embody the whole Malaysia Baru tagline, right? This is something that we must all accept, not just from the government but the civil society as well. And if my trip to America have shown and have taught me is the fact that you build enough momentum on the ground with all this kind of thing. And look at my experience when I was in Nebraska. You know, the local host was just so, oh wow, this is how Malaysia is. But at the same time, one of them was learned enough, was well-traveled, and start asking me real hard questions like the recent corruption cases. Is it true that you guys are practicing hudud? Is it true that, you know, some of you guys don't allow women to vote and stuff? These are real hard questions, ignorant as they may be, but these are criticism to us. And for this kind of program, we must be able to, again, like Melissa said, we must be able to receive them and must know how to respond to them.
Right, you know, one of the things, of course, is that there's a certain asymmetry. Foreign press does cover Malaysia, and of course, you know, they've done us a service by...
But they parachute in, though, Sharad.
They do, but in some instances, they do have the headquarters here or in the region, and many of them are correspondents over time. So they build up real knowledge about the country, right? In America, it's quite different. We don't generally have journalists based in Washington, D.C., for instance. What needs to change in our way that we do coverage of foreign affairs, do you think?
Well, I think it goes back to, you know, how much money, the funding, right? So it's very expensive to have a bureau in New York or DC or what have you. But, you know, a couple of the journalists there the journalists that I went with, said that they had bureaus in the US, but they had to shut it down because it just became unsustainable. And I think that's the danger, because news is expensive. And when you shut down bureaus, foreign bureaus, you then lose the local perspective being in a foreign country. And the danger is then you lift from wires, then you lift from CNN, and you only get the CNN and the Foxes and the CNBC and the New York Times. And they're all partisan. I mean, let's admit it. Yeah, they're all partisan. So that is the danger and the shame of it.
Okay, Raman, you know, in the last minute or so that we have, your party, will it continue to do these engagements? I know there are a lot of problems internally, but will you also be focusing on external relations?
And, you see, over the years, ever since when I was first became an UMNO youth member, which was about 10 years ago, I've realized, and then by then I was just already doing the whole diplomat circle. I was just talking to civil society, talking to some of the guys in the embassies. Mm-hmm. One of the comments 10 years ago was, how come nobody from UMNO wants to talk to us, right? For whatever reason. But today, I think, especially with the younger generation after Khairi Jamaluddin, and then of course now with the new leadership as well, we've got a whole host of young people in UMNO who's willing to engage. I mean, yes, we'll take all your criticism. I mean, look, myself and whatnot, and then some of my contemporaries, we're okay. And I think this is a hope for UMNO, because the more we learn, the better we are at doing and needing to win election.
Oh, okay. Wonderful talking to both of you. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Melissa Idris from BFM 89.9 and Raman Hussain from UMNO Youth, both recipients of American government programs that bring foreign influences, whether in the media and politics, to their country to get them to understand the United States of America. This has been Let's Talk with Misha Radkutan, only on Astro Wani.